breaking news now. News Radio 1080 KRLD.
A confirmed case of Ebola in Dallas. Dr. Thomas Frieden, the director of the Centers for Disease Control, making the announcement just a few minutes ago.
I have no doubt that we will control this importation or this case of Ebola so that it does not spread widely in this country.
A patient in strict isolation at Texas Health Presbyterian in Dallas. That's where we find KRLD's Austin York.
The patient had recently returned to Dallas from West Africa, where the Ebola virus has killed more than 3,000 people.
A team from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is on the ground in Dallas this morning, responding to the first case of Ebola diagnosed in the United States. KRLD's Emily Trube has been all over this story for us, and she joins us now live with the latest. Emily?
The patient is a man visiting family in North Texas. He flew into DFW Airport September 20th from Liberia. The potentially deadly virus can only be spread through direct contact of bodily fluids, but the team of a dozen infectious disease experts from the CDC are not taking any chances. They're looking to talk to people who were on the plane from West Africa with the man. Dallas County Health and Human Services Director Zach Thompson says his office is working with the investigators.
We're focused on family members, we're focused on friends, those who have immediate contact with this particular patient. And so everyone else needs to relax.
Now, the Dallas ambulance crew drove the Ebola patient to the hospital over the weekend, is now taking extra precautions. Their boss, Dallas Fire Rescue Assistant Chief Norman Seals, says his people are well trained, even though Ebola has never been seen around here before.
I don't know that they woke up that morning and said, hey, we're going to make an Ebola run today.
The first man to be diagnosed in this country with the Ebola virus has died at Texas Presbyterian Hospital. We have team coverage for you on the developing story.
Dallas Mayor Mike Rawlings learned of the death as he was handed a note during this morning's Dallas City Council meeting.
I remain confident in the abilities of our healthcare professionals and the medical advances in the United States, and reassure you we will stop the Ebola virus in its tracks.
I'm Alice Rios. The State Health Department is out with a statement now on the passing of Thomas Duncan. And it reads, the past week has been an enormous test of our health system, but for one family, it has been far more personal. Today, they lost a dear member of their family.
Keep it right here on KRLD for the very latest on this developing story, as well as checking it out at CBSDFW.com for the latest information on the Ebola crisis in Texas.
A hazmat crew is cleaning the East Dallas apartment of a healthcare worker who has Ebola. This is the first known case of the virus being contracted in the U.S.
The people who live in the M Streets neighborhood got this message yesterday.
This is an important message from the city of Dallas. Please be advised that a healthcare worker who lives in your area has tested positive for the Ebola virus.
Breaking news now. News Radio 1080 KRLD.
And we have news this morning of a second nurse now in isolation at Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital, Dallas.
News of the second diagnosis was released just hours ago by the Texas Department of State Health Services. The healthcare worker who has tested positive via the state lab for Ebola was on the team that helped treat Ebola victim Thomas Eric Duncan. This nurse, along with nurse Nina Pham, are part of a group of 76 employees being tracked by Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital. Along with the news of this second healthcare worker to test positive for Ebola are allegations from a nurse association about what they say was a lack of protocol and training at Presbyterian for this kind of situation. Texas Health Executive Vice President Dr. Daniel Varga responded during this morning's news conference this way.
I think the case of this patient here shows that the ability to intake those folks, get them into isolation and manage them has been very effective.
And this just coming in from Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas, quoting here, Texas Health Presbyterian Dallas is actively consulting with Emory University Hospital in Atlanta and other health officials about the possibility of transferring to Emory our second co-worker being treated for Ebola.
Breaking news now. News Radio 1080 KRLD.
New information this morning about the second healthcare worker to get Ebola. Dallas Mayor Mike Rawlings spoke at a morning news conference that you heard live on KRLD.
It may get worse before it gets better. but it will get better.
The city of Dallas has representatives at the latest Ebola victims apartment.
Hazmat crews, Dallas police, and fire rescue worked together this morning to do an initial cleaning of apartment surfaces. Later today, the firm hired by the city, Protect Environmental, will arrive to fully clean the victim's apartment and car. Residents were handed flyers and spoken with by Mayor Mike Rawlings this morning. The flyers described the situation and the symptoms of Ebola.
Stay calm and informed. That's the message from the Dallas County Health Director about this latest case of Ebola.
I think the focus now has to be on Dallas County residents and anyone living in that area, not to have any panic or fear.
The CDC doubling down after a second Texas Health Presbyterian nurse is diagnosed with Ebola. KRLD's LP Phillips kicks off our team coverage. He says the latest victim being flown to Georgia for treatment.
Amber Vincent will be treated at Emory University after she is confirmed to be the second nurse to take care of Thomas Duncan and come down with Ebola.
New concern, new rules for those who treated Dallas Ebola victim Thomas Duncan.
Just as the first nurse had direct contact with Thomas Duncan, so did nurse number two, Amber Vincent. The Centers for Disease Control is still trying to determine how the virus spread to the two, but there is a lot of attention being focused on protective clothing and how the nurses used it.
CBS News Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. John LaPook reports that Amber Vincent called the CDC several times on the day before she boarded a commercial flight from Cleveland to DFW. She reported she was running a fever of 99.5 degrees, but since that was below an apparent threshold of 100.4 for infectious diseases, the CDC staff did not tell her she couldn't fly.
The House subcommittee examining the response to the Ebola outbreak heard from Dr. Daniel Varga, the hospital CEO, by video conference. Varga delivered an apology from his hospital.
Unfortunately, in our initial treatment of Mr. Duncan, despite our best intentions and a highly skilled medical team, we made mistakes. We did not correctly diagnose his symptoms as those of Ebola.
This is LP Phillips in Oak Cliff. With nowhere else to turn, County Judge Jenkins and Mayor Rawlings turned to the Catholic Church, hoping for a place to shelter Louise Tro and three others while they were in quarantine. The place is a cabin in a retreat off Madison and Clarendon.
You can imagine what it's like for anybody living under that threat and the tension of every day, the fear of what they experience in the first 2 days of this whole matter.
Nurses at Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas speaking out about the Ebola issue and what they call inaccurate accusations. Here's KRLD's Austin York.
To show that they were a cohesive unit, the nurses and doctors joined hands as they walked out of the hospital in a show of support for the facility. Nurse Shante Irving says the hospital is not only state-of-the-art, but has the personnel that is capable of handling any type of medical emergency.
We are a tight-knit group. We are a family.
Governor Rick Perry says facilities in Richardson and Galveston will take in any future patients diagnosed with the virus.
Facilities that could provide world-class care to those stricken by Ebola or other critical infectious diseases.
The dog that's melting hearts across the globe, now testing negative for Ebola.
The lab results just came in for one-year-old Bentley. The King Charles Spaniel belongs to Nina Pham. Nina continues to be cared for in Maryland for the Ebola virus.
Key news, Amber Vincent, the nurse from Dallas, is being released from the hospital in Atlanta, Georgia at Emory University. She has been declared Ebola-free, and the news conference is being held now at Emory University. Let's join it as it begins.
I'm so grateful to be well, and first and foremost, I want to thank God. I sincerely believe that with God, all things are possible.
Take it to the White House. President Obama, new information on Ebola.
No other nation is doing as much to make sure that we contain and ultimately eliminate this outbreak.
A frightening scene at Fort Hood.
We have an active shooter on Fort Hood.
A shooting rampage that left four people dead, including the suspected gunman. KRLD's Emily Troop kicks off our team coverage live from Fort Hood. Emily?
We are set to learn this morning about the 16 people who were injured in this horrific shooting spree. Nine of those people are being treated at Scott and White Hospital in Temple. Three are in critical condition. The shooting spree, as you said, left three dead. The gunman took his own life.
There seems to be a lot of questions about the gunman who has been identified as Specialist Ivan Lopez. He served for a brief period in Iraq in 2011, reportedly as a truck driver. He had self-reported a brain injury. He was being treated for depression and undergoing diagnosis for PTSD. We do know that he was not living on the base. He lived nearby with his wife and at least one child. Investigators say that he had recently bought the gun used in the shooting, and the shooting took place over several locations on the base, and witnesses say that the gunman also shot from his car. There are a lot of questions about his motivation and how he got on the base with the gun. The Department of Defense is leading this investigation with help from the FBI, and the military is set to give an update today. Reporting live at Fort Hood, Emily Troop, News Radio 1080 KRLD.
And at 4:03, we want to begin with the latest from the National Weather Service. Dallas County now under a severe thunderstorm warning until 5 this afternoon. Right now, the National Weather Service detecting a severe thunderstorm capable of producing quarter-size hail and damaging winds over 65 miles an hour. The storm right now located just a little bit west of Grand Prairie, moving due east around 30 miles an hour.
The large hail is coming down in Fort Worth. KRLD's Chuck Schechner is out in it.
Large hail pelting this car now. I-30 and Beach Street westbound. The traffic is stopped. A blowing wind is causing a horizontal rain. Visibility about 3 car lengths right now as the hail continues. The wind gusting at times.
Very dangerous storms that are moving through Dallas and Fort Worth right now. Chris Summer along with Matt Thomas and Tayshia Stevens. First off, we want to give you, before we update the list of current warnings, a couple of very important pieces of information that have just come into the KRLD News Center. This first one is from the National Weather Service in Fort Worth. And when they use this kind of language, you need to pay attention. They say very destructive winds will arrive in downtown Dallas in the next 10 minutes or so.
Breaking news now. News Radio 1080 KRLD.
And we're beginning to see some damage. We just heard from KRLD's Chuck Schechner, who's in downtown Fort Worth. Just north of there in the Fort Worth Stockyards, a wall, a brick wall, has collapsed into a parking lot, and it appears several cars have been damaged by this wall coming down in the Fort Worth Stockyards area.
Now, DART suspending rail service across the entire system. At least 120,000 people across the area are without power in Dallas-Fort Worth, and we want to stress again, if you're in Dallas County, this remains a dangerous situation.
Carissa Schuler with the State Fair of Texas joins us live now. We understand, Carissa, that you guys have basically cleared out the midway and made sure that everybody has gotten undercover. Is that right?
Correct, yes. We shut down the rides a little before 4 o'clock.
We want to go live now to Chris Spears with Encore Electric Delivery. They have had a lot of work to do and still do with a lot of down power lines. Chris, thanks so much for joining us. Give us the latest on the situation from Encore's perspective.
Sure. So we saw a significant, or we're currently seeing a significant number of folks who are experiencing a power outage.
We want to go live to the National Weather Service in Fort Worth now. Steve Fano joins us. And Steve, this was a pretty impressive event, the line of thunderstorms coming through. And it appears we have quite a bit of straight line wind damage, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's what it's looking like right now. Wind gusts anywhere between probably 60 and 80 miles an hour across the Metroplex.
We want to go back out to KRLD's Chuck Schechner, who is in the Fort Worth Stockyards, where an entire wall, a brick wall, came crashing down in the storms this afternoon. Chuck.
There's about a three-story tall brick wall on the back of a building here just north of Lonesome Dove that collapsed. One of the first to see the mess was Morgan Trotter.
When I went out and looked at the parking lot, I saw another pile of bricks where there was not a pile of bricks before. A wall between Lonesome Dove and White Elephant had collapsed.
And then as the storms moved eastward, Arlington was right in the crosshairs. KRLD's Kurt Lewis reports Arlington Baptist College took a big hit.
The college sits near Division and Bowen and is on one of the highest elevations in Arlington, so there was nothing to break the wind as it howled in at up to 70 miles an hour. Freshman Cassie Bush was simply stunned by the power she felt as the wind slammed the women's dorm.
And I didn't know what to do. I was freaking out. It was terrifying to wake up to.
The wind quite literally tore the roof off the dorm, depositing it in the parking lot, damaging or destroying several of the students' cars.
Well, during the run of the State Fair of Texas, there are days when various groups get reduced rates, but most will pay full price. Where does that money go? One item in particular caught the attention of KRLD legal reporter L.P. Phillips, who has the exclusive report.
For 24 glorious days, they pay their money to get into the State Fair of Texas.
$34, I think.
For the two of you?
Yeah.
How much did you pay?
$17 a piece.
You ever ask where that money goes for?
No.
No, sir. Where does it go?
We wondered the same thing about one budget item in particular. A Dallas lawyer named Robert B. Smith of the Smith & Smith Law Firm has served as the State Fair of Texas General Legal Counsel for more than 11 years and has made an average of just under $300,000 per year between 2002 and 2012, according to the fair's public IRS Form 990. Linda Lampkin of the Washington, D.C.-based Economic Research Institute looked at what the attorneys for a similar-sized not-for-profits make.
The average legal position was paying about $161,000. Basically, the high range of that would be $205,000.
But wait, there's more. For at least five of those years, Smith's father, Russell Smith, who is also with the Smith & Smith law firm, made an average of $148,000 a year as the co-general counsel. And for five of those years, the law firm itself made an average of $173,280 for legal services rendered. In all, just under $5 million.
That's a good job. You made it. Yeah.
You look stunned.
Good job if you can get it, yeah.
To be certain, there is legal work done at any not-for-profit, the State Fair of Texas included. We wanted to see a breakdown of the work that was billed. Robert Smith did not return our calls. Carissa Schuler of the State Fair of Texas did, though, and told me, quote, "We make public what is required to be made public by law, and no more." We also had questions about the role of the general counsel, who also serves on a committee that approves the bills and who is also on the fair's board of directors.
As first reported by KRLD News, the attorney who serves as general legal counsel for the State Fair of Texas, his father and their law firm have made nearly $5 million during an 11-year period, far above the national average. But there's another issue that other lawyers say raise questions. KRLD's L.P. Phillips investigates and has the exclusive.
Dallas lawyer Robert B. Smith has made at least $300,000 as the general legal counsel to the State Fair of Texas in each of the last 6 years that the fair's IRS Form 990 tax statements are available. It's more than the city attorneys for both Dallas or Fort Worth, more than the Dallas County District Attorney, more than a state district court judge. But unlike any of those positions, Smith also serves as a director for the State Fair of Texas and has been on the fair board's executive committee, which carries out the management, business, and affairs of the fair. James McCormick is an Austin attorney who has served as the general counsel for the State Bar of Texas and has served as the chief disciplinary counsel for the bar. He says while it's not prohibited for a lawyer to serve as an ex officio, non-voting member of the board, the lawyer has to keep advice providing separate from decision making.
Because you're kind of crossing over as a lawyer from being an independent advice giver to actually being the executor of policy or a decision maker in the organization. Instead of just the trusted legal advisor.
That raises the question of whether a conflict of interest might exist if Robert B. Smith has been a voting member of the fair's board. According to the fair's IRS Form 990 filings, they didn't even have a conflict of interest policy until one was adopted in April of 2009. Even without such a policy, with Smith serving as the general legal counsel, a member of the executive committee, and a board member, McCormick says it's possible for conflicts to arise, and the attorney has to avoid them.
And if a conflict is capable of being waived, the nature of the conflict has to be disclosed to the board or the organization, and the client's consent to the conflict has to be expressly made.
Did Robert Smith vote on board matters or abstain from voting? Smith did not return our calls. Carissa Schuler of the State Fair did and told me, quote, "We make public what is required to be made public by law and no more."
Near the softball fields on Winfrey Point at White Rock Lake in Dallas, there's an historical marker that reads, "On this spot, a camp once stood that housed German POWs."
The fact that you have members of Hitler's armies camped out here on the shores of White Rock Lake piques people's interest.
Dr. Stephen Butler wrote the words on the marker that tell this story. During the latter half of World War II, around 80,000 German and Italian POWs were sent to Texas. It may seem like an odd choice until you take a look at the articles from the 1929 Geneva Convention, which reads that prisoners of war must be housed away from the battle zone in a climate similar to the one they were captured in. The Axis soldiers brought to Texas were captured in northern Africa, and it seems the U.S. Army thought Texas's climate was similar enough. But before it was a POW camp, it housed young men of the Civilian Conservation Corps. The bombing of Pearl Harbor turned those young men into soldiers, and everything was thrown at the war effort, including the camp at Winfrey Point. In a 1976 interview, former Dallas Parks director L.B. Houston talks about that time and the German soldiers held at Winfrey Point. Former Parks Department employee Sally Rodriguez.
He talked about what artisans they were, and they actually built their own enclosure, the fence that enclosed the camp.
And they went to work at Fair Park, which had been leased to the Army. The large buildings served as warehouses and workshops. Believe it or not, the Nazi POWs were put to work repairing U.S. military uniforms. When the war was over, American soldiers crowded into universities, thanks to the GI Bill. SMU ran out of dorm space.
And there were so many GIs who were doing this that they ran out of student housing. So they sent some of them over here.
So the camp at Winfrey Point, built by the CCC, turned into barracks to house German POWs, became off-campus housing for veterans returning from World War II. And all that's left is a fire hydrant and some old photos. Where are those cabins now? And what happened to the German soldiers? You can find out what we've learned and add what you know on CBSDFW.com.
Your top story, Dallas County Commissioner John Wiley Price has now been before a judge. Being allowed out of jail after a massive corruption indictment is unsealed today. KRLD's LP Phillips kicks off our team coverage with a breakdown of the charges.
The 107-page indictment accuses Price of taking about $950,000 in bribes and payoffs to make sure political consultant Kathy Neely's clients got the contracts they wanted. The indictment says much of the activity was centered in the area of the so-called Inland Port, a federal trade zone in Price's district. U.S. Attorney Sarah Saldana says Neely coughed up the money, Price delivered the vote.
Using his influence and position on the commissioner's court to act favorably on behalf of Ms. Neely's clients and those of Christian Campbell, who's another consultant, and two, for providing confidential insider information about Dallas County business.
Christian Campbell is also under indictment. So is Price's administrative assistant, Daphne Fain. This afternoon, Price was led into the courtroom in cuffs and shackles. A U.S. magistrate is letting all four out of jail on personal recognizance bond while the case proceeds, and that could take years. LP Phillips News, Radio 1080 KRLD.
I'm Austin York. John Wiley Price emerged from the federal courthouse with his attorney and said very little before getting in an SUV and taking off.
I thought I commented. Not guilty.
Anything else you want to say about the allegations against you, sir?
Not guilty.
Commissioner, what do you have to say in this quarter?
Not guilty.
City Councilman Dwayne Carraway released a statement saying, quote, "We should all allow the legal process to run its course before rushing to judgment." Price's fellow commissioner, Judge Clay Jenkins, did not say much about the indictment, but rather that the court would focus on strengthening law enforcement, improving services without tax increases, and increasing the minimum wage, not concern themselves with an outside investigation. Austin York, News Radio 1080, KRLD.
And keep it here on KRLD for the latest on this developing story. And if you'd like to read the indictment, go to our website, cbsdfw.com.
Congressman Henry Cuellar calls it a critical situation.
Because if you're just looking at the lower Rio Grande and you're getting 1,200 people a day, over 70% of them are from, not from Mexico, but from other places in Central America, and 300 or 400 a day Our kids are coming in with their parents.
Cuellar says this is also causing major problems for the Border Patrol, as about 40% of agents are now having to fill out paperwork in an office instead of patrolling the border with Mexico. Joe Comas, News Radio 1080 KRLT.
Dr. Austin King, head of the Texas Medical Association, is calling on Governor Perry and President Barack Obama to allow doctors to screen all of the unaccompanied children who have been coming across the border from Honduras and El Salvador.
You don't know
what diseases that they may have currently, and they need to be screened both because of their own good as a humanitarian gesture, but also because of the public health standpoint.
Thousands of the kids have been and are being bused to different parts of the state and country. Right now, medical screening is not part of immigration processing. Dr. King says that doctors have volunteered their time along the border, but they can only see the kids who are obviously sick. Emily Troop, News Radio 1080 KRLD.
Baseball was a very different game in 1860. Imagine, if you can, no gloves, no called balls or strikes.
Theoretically, an individual could have as many pitches thrown to him or her as they would like, but it's still three strikes and you're out. But there are just no walks in baseball.
Chris Shipman has been a shortstop on the Farmers Branch Mustangs for 3 years. If a batter hits a ball and it bounces once before being caught, it's an out.
We have a natural outfield, if you will, a fence in the tree line. But oftentimes, it literally is you hit the ball and you can run as many you can run as far as you want all the way home until the outfielder throws the ball in or gets you out.
Hey, bada, 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 swing, bada.
And they'll get the ball back because they use only one ball a game. It's made of leather, yarn, and India rubber, and it's furnished by the visitors, kept by the winner as a trophy. Shipman says we didn't see overhanded pitching until the end of the 1870s with the advent of gloves. One big difference now, the teams are co-ed.
There are no speed restrictions, so you could very easily have a potentially 70, 80 mile an hour underhanded throw.
The Mustangs play at Farmers Branch Historical Park. It doesn't have a diamond, but this version of baseball doesn't require one.
There's no dedicated base paths. There's no dedicated pitcher's mound. It literally is a field, and every time we go out to play, we set up the field.
It all harkens back to a time when people played to play.
The Cincinnati Reds were the actual first all-professional paid baseball team, and that didn't take place until the late 1870s, early 1880s.
And they do it because
it's all about spectators. It's all about being a gentleman. And it's about the love of the game.
Lots of activity in the Meals on Wheels kitchen.
That's what Kim told me.
And the offices of parent agency, the Visiting Nurses Association, were packed and crawling with officers in uniform, all ready to go out and deliver meals.
Will they be responding to calls while they're delivering meals?
The ones that are here, we work in community engagement, so that's part of our job. Also, the NPO officers, they work the neighborhoods, so they also, that is part of their jobs to reach out to people. And they are not the patrol officers that will be called, no. So we're good here.
That's Dallas Police Community Outreach Manager Diana Hernandez. The 200 officers delivered 1,000 meals in all. And Chief David Brown joined in. He went to Mrs. Coleman's house in West Dallas.
Hi, Ms. Coleman, it's Chief Brown. How are you? I'm delivering the meal today.
Along with her lunch, he had brought her a brightly colored fleece blanket.
Hi! Hi. Merry Christmas! Oh, I'm so thankful, y'all.
What you watching, Wendy Williams?
Yes.
What's he talking about today?
Oh, I don't know. You might take it away from me.
Well, how do you feel right now?
Well, you know, this is, you know, beyond community policing. Of course, that's the effort that we label it as, but this is really, you know, one of the things that we go into public service for. It tugs at your heart that people who need assistance sometimes don't get all the care that they need, but for VNA, the Visiting Nurses Association, and their efforts, and now our partnership with them, we were able to touch someone's heart, and we end up touching our own, you know, because it's obviously the holiday season, but again, there but for the grace of God go I. Many of, you know, my mother's still with me, so it's beyond just public service and community policing. I think it's just more of a human experience.
Mrs. Coleman and the other people who were visited by police as part of this day of action represent only a fourth of the seniors and homebound people who get daily visits from Meals on Wheels in Dallas County. Emily Troop, News Radio 1080 KRLD.
The development of two specialized Ebola treatment centers comes under debate as Governor Perry's Infectious Disease Task Force hears from doctors from all over Texas. KRLD's Austin Bureau Chief Chris Fox is there.
Dr. David Lakey of the Texas Department of State Health Services explains the task force's new shift in strategy in dealing with Ebola patients.
The national strategy was that community hospitals would be able to care for individuals. Our experience here shows that strategy needs to change and that you really need to have some facilities where you have folks that are specifically trained for this.
Dr. Joseph McCormick of UT Health Center Brownsville disagrees with that change.
What we're seeing here is the fear that we can't manage it under normal circumstances, and that's just not the case.
McCormick fears the new strategy will leave local hospital staff unable to deal with any cases. In Austin, Chris Fox, News Radio 1080 KRLD.
Eric Williams hung his head as Judge Mike Snipes read the death penalty verdict and told the court that it is
ordered by this court to carry out the sentence of death.
During the trial, Williams' estranged wife told how the couple celebrated the deaths of District Attorney Mike McClellan and his wife last year with a steak dinner the night of the murders. McClellan's son, J.R. McClellan, will turn the tables on Eric Williams tonight.
While you're eating bologna sandwich, I'm going to have steaks, ribeyes, baked potatoes, fat glass of sweet tea, while you drink water and sandwich, and I'll be there to watch you die.
And now we've come to my favorite part of the broadcast day for your hometown, Fort Worth. A very special guest joins us. She is a graduate of Arlington Heights High School right here in Fort Worth, a UTA graduate, was in private business for many years. She was our tax assessor collector in Tarrant County and now the mayor of the fair city of Fort Worth. Good afternoon, Mayor Betsy Price. How are you?
I'm good, Chris. How are you? It's great to see you. Isn't this a fun place to be in Fort Worth?
It is so cool. I know you're sitting in the pen today.
I'm sitting in the pen. You know, they don't let me out in public. They pen me up all the time.
Well, everybody follows Neiman Marcus. I mean, it's a homegrown company, and it's a big story down here when they announced finally they're going into the Big Apple, a monster new store, gorgeous new place that's going to open in New York City. But it turns out it's a big story everywhere. Wall Street Journal has a big article in color pictures, and everybody in New York's excited. Karen Katz has got to be excited. She's the CEO of Neiman Marcus. Joins us right now. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, David.
Thank you. I mean, this is a very big story up there. Why has Neiman Marcus never been in Manhattan?
You know, I think that certainly as I look back over the three decades that I've been with the company, we never really seriously considered going to New York City.
And that is the phone number to remember, 800-800-7277. Good afternoon. It's Matt Thomas. Just got here to Children's Medical Center Dallas, joining Chris Summer. And Chris, you know, I heard you earlier this afternoon telling the story about walking across the breezeway in the parking garage and seeing the kids coming in for treatment. And, you know, that's what it really is all about. Christmas is for children, and that's why we are here today.
And we are asking you to open your hearts. And we all have a different reason, Matt, for wanting to give in a situation like this. Christmas is 2 weeks from today. It's the perfect opportunity. All you have to do is call 800-800-7277.
This is CBS News.
It is the first case of its type in U.S. history, and this afternoon it is right here in North Texas. 90 degrees at 5:03. Welcome to the KRLD Afternoon News.
Breaking news now. News Radio 1080 KRLD.
A confirmed case of Ebola in Dallas. Dr. Thomas Frieden, the director of the Centers for Disease Control, making the announcement just a few minutes ago.
I have no doubt that we will control this importation or this case of Ebola so that it does not spread widely in this country.
A patient in strict isolation at Texas Health Presbyterian in Dallas. That's where we find KRLD's Austin York.
The patient had recently returned to Dallas from West Africa, where the Ebola virus has killed more than 3,000 people. Now, samples from that patient were sent to the CDC in Atlanta and did come back as positive for the Ebola virus. Now, officials here are saying that the procedures and equipment here at Presbyterian are up to the challenge to take care of this patient, and they're also trying to calm concerns that people have, saying that the only way you can really get the Ebola virus is transmitted through some very direct contact with the patient. We are awaiting a 5:30 press conference for more information. At Presbyterian, Austin York, News Radio 1080, KRLD.
State health officials say only one case of Ebola has been diagnosed in Texas and that no others are suspected so far.
We have more now on the timeline of all this. The patient left Liberia on September 19th, arrived here on the 20th. When he landed, he had no signs of the disease, but started showing symptoms around the 24th, went to Texas Health Presbyterian in Dallas, CDC Director Thomas Frieden.
The reality is that patients travel, individuals travel, and as appears to have happened in this case, individuals may travel before they have any symptoms. One of the things that CDC has done in Liberia, Sierra Leone, Guinea, and Lagos is to work with the airport's authorities. So 100% of the individuals getting on planes are screened for fever before they get on the plane. And if they have a fever, they're pulled out of the line, assessed for Ebola, and don't fly unless Ebola is ruled out.
Frieden says priority one is treating the patients and identifying those who might have come into contact with the patient.
We have a lot more information on this first confirmed Ebola case in the United States that's happening here in North Texas right here on the air on KRLD and online at cbsdfw.com.
Tarrant County jurors deliberated for 2 hours before deciding on a punishment for convicted killer Michelle Williams. KRLD's Chuck Schechner is at the Tarrant County Justice Center. He joins us live now with details. Chuck?
You know, they came back with a sentence of 60 years for the killer mom and the shooting death of her husband as he slept in her bed. That also includes a 10-year sentence in addition to that for tampering with the evidence at the scene of that murder, both to be served at the same time. Jack Strickland, the prosecutor, says he's pleased with the verdict.
Well, this was a hard-fought trial, and it was a convoluted trial and a sometimes confusing trial, but I think, as so often happens, the jury got it right.
He had asked the jury to give her at least 40 years. They gave her 60. The maximum would have been life in prison. She'll have to serve at least half that 60-year term before she's eligible for parole. Live in Tarrant County, Chuck Schechner, News Radio 1080, KRLD.
It is now 5:07 at KRLD. Traffic and weather together on the 8s next, and then continuing coverage. Ebola confirmed in North Texas. We're about 25 minutes away from a news conference at Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas. You'll hear portions of that live, continuing coverage on 1080 KRLD and online at cbsdfw.com. 5:07.
Traffic and weather together on the 8s. News Radio 1080 KRLD.
And at 5:08, still noticing a bit of a delay along 183 in Irving. For an update, let's go right to Randy Fuller.
Westbound 183, that westbound service road at O'Connor is blocked up right now. Wreckers on the scene, though, so that's some good news. They're in the process of clearing this up, but it's still causing some heavy traffic that is affecting northbound O'Connor right now. Northbound 75 Central from the High 5 to about Beltline, moving really slow right now. And eastbound 635 LBJ, a little bit of a minor stack-up right now at Luna. We've seen it heavier in other days, but right now it's moving along at a pretty light pace, and then it continues that way past 35E onto about Josie.
Well, as we mentioned earlier, that very serious multi-vehicle accident up in Collin County in Melissa clear just minutes ago, but that one sat there for a while. 75 northbound Melissa Road, so it's still heavy and slow as traffic slowly unwinds. 75 northbound between 121 to Virginia. Traffic is rolling stop and go. We've also got delays in Plano. 75 northbound between Spring Creek Parkway to Ridgemont. And the usual rush hour delays underway on the tollway northbound between the Bush Turnpike to Parker. Still have this trouble spot in Arlington. For an update, let's check in with Julian Rogers.
Eastbound I-30, the accident occurred under the Davis Bridge. Now the emergency activity still tying up the right lane. The delays just keep getting worse. Right now traffic is at a standstill from East Loop 820. So that's setting you back about 30 minutes or so. I would definitely consider using Lancaster to Division to try to get through this. We also have the other trouble spot, 360 southbound. That's going to be at FAA Boulevard. Consistent backup there from about Midway. It's been hanging around there for the last 20 minutes or so. So it's setting you back about 10 minutes there. And if you'll just wade through it, again, that's 360 southbound at FAA Boulevard.
The usual rush hour delays in Denton County. 35 northbound between Swisher to State School Mayhill in Corinth. In Denton, southbound 35 between Loop 288 to Post Oak is rolling heavy and slow. With traffic and weather, together on the 8th, your next report, 5:18. I'm Debbie Douglas on your traffic leader, KRLD.
Clear skies tonight with a low of 73. Tomorrow, partly cloudy and breezy, up to 92. Currently, it's 90.
Good afternoon. It is 5:11 at KRLD, live in the Breitling Energy News Center. Chris Summer, Tayshia Stevens, and Matt Thomas.
Dr. Thomas Frieden with the CDC talking about the Ebola patient now confirmed at Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas this afternoon.
That an individual traveling from Liberia has been diagnosed with Ebola in the United States. This individual left Liberia on the 19th of September, arrived in the U.S. on the 20th of September, had no symptoms when departing Liberia or entering this country, but 4 or 5 days later, around the 24th of September, began to develop symptoms. On the 26th of September, initially sought care, and Sunday, the 28th of September, was admitted to a hospital in Texas and placed on isolation. We received in our laboratory today specimens from the individual, tested them, and they tested positive for Ebola.
Dr. David Lakey with the Texas Department of State Health Services says this is the only case they've detected so far.
I want to reiterate that we have no other suspected cases in the state of Texas at this time, but we are closely monitoring the situation and we're ready to assist in any way that is needed.
And the man had been in West Africa earlier this month, did not show symptoms when he arrived in the U.S. He got sick a few days later, and that's when he went to the hospital. Officials say he was in North Texas to visit family. We have a lot more information on this first confirmed Ebola case in the U.S. here in the North Texas, here on the air and online at CBSDFW.com.
KRLD News Time 5:13. Dallas police are interviewing witnesses still after a security guard was shot and killed overnight at a convenience store. It was during a robbery in Pleasant Grove. Christina Medrano lives just down the street, says she visits the store just about every day.
This strip right here is considered a hot zone of drugs and things like that. He was a good person. I can't believe that he's gone.
Investigators say so far they have no leads, no suspects in the killing.
A lot of confusion between Allen Fire Department and Allen Fire Association over what's supposed to be a benefit.
There's a lot of back and forth between the two organizations over the association's traditional pink breast cancer shirts. Firefighters said earlier today they won't be selling them this year because Fire Chief Bill Hawley had refused to give his permission. But a statement from Teresa Warren with the city of Allen says it's because a formal request was never made by the association. Jeremy Pankin, president of the Allen Fire Department Union, says as the president, he has his own way of making requests, and he's never had problems before.
If I were to send a request as Jeremy Pankin, the firefighter, while on duty, I would have sent all my requests to the chain of command. However, as the chief of our organization, as the president, I have always reached out to the chief. All communication goes directly through him when it regards to association business.
In lieu of shirt sales, firefighters will donate to Cleaning for a Reason this year and sell last year's leftover shirts online for $5 apiece. Kristen Weissel, News Radio 1080 KRLD.
In the minutes ahead here on 1080 KRLD, a person hospitalized in Dallas being treated this afternoon for Ebola infection. Up next, we're learning more about this individual. A live special report from CBS News, and in 15 minutes, you will hear a news conference from Texas Health Presbyterian in Dallas, the very latest on this developing story. It's 5:14 at KRLD. Traffic and weather next.
Traffic and weather together on the 8s. News Radio 1080 KRLD.
It's 5:18, a brand new trouble spot in Richardson. Let's go right to Randy Fuller.
Northbound 75 Central at Beltline. HOV, two left-hand lanes are currently blocked, and it is a very heavy stop-and-go. Backup stretches to at least High 5. That's the heaviest part of the backup. Also, the ramps from westbound 635 LBJ headed north onto 75 Central. Those are pretty well stacked up right now as well. And westbound 183, the westbound service road is completely blocked up right now, although there are wreckers on the scene, so the cleanup process is definitely underway, but northbound O'Connor is affected with this problem that's over on the ramp. Looks like eastbound 635 LBJ, Oates to about Town East, you're going to encounter some heavy traffic. And then northbound 35E from Manana to Walnut Hill, that is definitely filling in there. And the stack-up starts from Walnut Hill through Royal to about 635 LBJ.
In Collin County, the Dallas North Tollway especially heavy on the northbound side between the Bush Turnpike to 121 on the southbound side. Spring Creek on down to the Bush Turnpike is stop and go. Both directions of the Bush Turnpike between Preston and the tollway, that's rolling stop and go. 75 northbound from the Bush Turnpike. As you approach Park, we've got a delay, then you're off the brakes, and then you're back on again right around Spring Creek to just past Legacy. Still have this trouble spot in Arlington. For an update, let's check in with Julian Rogers.
Eastbound I-30 at Davis, and actually we have some good news here. This accident's cleared out. Big backup to deal with, though. It's going to be unwinding from I-30 for a while, or excuse me, 820 for a while. And if you're on the westbound side, we've got some onlooker traffic associated with that. 121 southbound heading towards Airport Freeway, new accident at Glade Road in the left lane. Expect a little slow traffic from Hall Johnson. And 360 southbound, still that wreck at FAA in the left lane, and that's got us backed up from Midway.
121 northbound between Josie and Old Denton Road. Traffic is rolling stop and go. We've also got delays northbound 35 between Swisher and State School Mayhill. Southbound 35 between Loop 288 to Post Oak, and 35 northbound from the Bush Turnpike to just past Frankfort. That's stop and go. With traffic and weather together on the 8th, your next report 528. I'm Debbie Douglas on your traffic leader, KRLD.
Good looking night tonight. Clear skies, low of 73. Tomorrow, partly cloudy and breezy, up to 92. 64 the low Thursday night. Friday, a high of only 84. Currently, we have 90 degrees.
All news, all day. News Radio 1080 KRLD.
Some medical history being made in North Texas this afternoon, and there is a chilling aspect to the story. For the first time in U.S. history, a patient confirmed to have Ebola, and that person is hospitalized this afternoon in Dallas. In less than 10 minutes, we will take you to a live news conference at Presbyterian, Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas. That's where KRLD's Austin York is standing by. Hospital officials planning to give us more information on this Ebola case in Dallas County.
Let's get a special report now from CBS.
CBS News special report. I'm Dan Revive. For the first time, a person's been diagnosed here in the United States with Ebola virus. Officials say only that it's a man being treated in isolation in Dallas, in Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital. He flew from Liberia to the U.S., arriving 10 days ago to visit relatives in this country. When he left Africa, he wasn't ill. He felt sick days after arriving. The head of the Federal Centers for Disease Control, Dr. Thomas Frieden, indicates the patient is not an American.
The focus here over the next period needs to be the patient, and we're very focused on trying to get any assistance we can to the patient who we understand is critically ill.
Four Americans were recently treated in the U.S. for Ebola. They were aid workers diagnosed while in Africa. Then they were hospitalized in the U.S. Another focus for health workers, tracing everyone with whom the patient has had contact in the past 10 days.
I have no doubt that we will control this importation or this case of Ebola so that it does not spread widely in this country.
Dr. Frieden says the patient seems to have spent time with only a handful of people, including relatives. A few, he says, may soon show signs of being ill. He also says the use of experimental drugs is being considered. Texas health officials say they're not aware of anyone else who shows signs of Ebola. CBS News Special Report, I'm Dan Revive.
And we're going to be taking you to a news conference at Texas Health Presbyterian Dallas. KRLD's Austin York is there gathering information. That is where the patient has been isolated. That news conference is expected to start at about 5:30. We'll bring it to you live here on KRLD, and of course we'll be streaming it at cbsdfw.com.
Tonight's final gubernatorial debate between State Senator Wendy Davis and Attorney General Greg Abbott expected to be significantly livelier than the last go-round. University of Texas Politics Project Director Jim Henson says it's a combination of a more relaxed format and a more aggressive Wendy Davis.
We're likely to see the Davis campaign be a little bit more open to taking some risks and trying to move Greg Abbott off of kind of defensive front-runner strategy that everybody knows he's going to want to take.
Polls have continued to show Abbott leading Davis. Tonight's debate begins at 8.
KRLD News Time is 5:24. It's time to check your money. Here's David Johnson.
Stock market took it on the chin today. A sell-off, not a particularly broad sell-off, but maybe a fitting in to a stop and start on and off the last 3 months. The end of the quarter showed gains on all of the major indices, but losses on all of them today. The Dow was down 28 points. The transportation average down 47. The NASDAQ was down a dozen. The S&P average was down 5. Oil is a big story. Oil at $90.68 fell $2.81. We saw it down over $3 a barrel much of the day, off 3% today, off 13% for the quarter. And gasoline hit even harder. Gasoline fell 4% today, down 11 cents, back to $2.58. 10-year rates up a bit to 2.51%. The Dow was down 28. David Johnson, News Radio 1080 KRLD.